You're listening to the podcast of Village Church in Burbank, California. To learn more about Village Church, visit our website at villagechurchburbank.org. We hope you enjoy today's message.
Tonight, I'd like you to turn to Psalm 95. As we look at this psalm, the title of this psalm tonight, it should be up on the screen, is God's Invitation, Come. And we're going to look at this psalm together in chapter 95 of Psalms. You know, the invitations of God are throughout the Bible. All the way from Genesis through Revelation, God is constantly inviting us to come into his presence, to come and follow him. Remember the words of Jesus, "Come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." The invitation to come. Throughout the Psalms, I think there's some 27 Psalms that are invitational Psalms, that God is inviting his people to come to worship, to come to love him, to come to serve him. But really, it's in a come into his presence he's calling us. And certainly Psalm 95 is one of those invitational psalms. In fact, it's in a section in which are entitled Sabbath Psalms. This is a psalm that's written to encourage people to remember the Sabbath, the day when God's people would come together and they would worship him as an assembly, as a people. Whatever town they were in, they would have a synagogue or something where they would come together and worship God. This is an encouragement to keep doing that, to do that. God is calling them to come into his presence. Now, this is a very interesting psalm because the first part of it is the invitation to come, and the second part of it is a warning about what happens if you don't come. You know, you don't find that very often in the invitations that you get in the mail. In fact, in invitations in the mail, we're always happy when they come. There's usually not a warning that says, "And now, if you don't come to this, we're coming to get you," or something like that. But this psalm is an invitation with a warning at the end. And so we're going to look at it. Let's read it. 96, if you follow, I think the words are on the screen. "Oh, sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord all the earth." Wrong psalm. "Oh, come, let us sing to the Lord. Let us make a joyful noise to the rock of our salvation. Let us come into his presence with thanksgiving. Let us make a joyful noise to him with songs of praise. For the Lord is a great God and a great king above all gods. In his hand are the depths of the earth. The heights of the mountains are his also. The sea is his, for he made it, and the dry land which his hands have formed. Oh, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker, for he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture and the sheep of his hand." Part one. Part two now. "Oh, that today you would listen to his voice. Do not harden your hearts as at Meribah, as on the day of Massah in the wilderness, when your ancestors tested me and put me to the proof, though they had seen my work. For 40 years I loathed that generation and said, 'They are a people whose hearts go astray, and they do not regard my ways.' Therefore, in my anger I swore, 'They shall not enter my rest.'" As you can see, two very different parts. You know, we like invitations. Do you like getting invitations? I like them because invitations say to us as we open that, "I want you to come. I've got an event that's taking place and I want you to be there." It makes me feel good to be included when somebody invites me to their event. In fact, it says that your presence is desired. There's a desire by the person who's hosting this event that I come. They want me to come. There's something about being wanted. Rather than just being a part of the group, you're actually wanted to be there as part of the group. In fact, as I read invitations, they say to me that I'm actually being honored to be included in this invitation. I mean, they could have asked almost anybody, right? But instead, they're asking me. It honors me to be chosen above others. There's an honor. And invitations are a way by which you also honor the host who's inviting you. When you respond to that invitation with your acceptance, yes, I will be there, and then you come, it honors the host. There's nothing worse than accepting an invitation and then not showing up. That dishonors the host because they've made preparations, they've made plans, and then when you don't come, they say, geez, what? It dishonors the host. But we like getting invitations because invitations are not just general announcements, they're specific. They're for me. When you get that invitation, it has your name on it. Mr. and Mrs. Wade Michaels or Wade and Cheryl Michaels are invited. We're honored, we're wanted, we're desired. It's specific, it makes me feel good. And that's what happens when we receive God's invitations. God is inviting us, as if by name, to come into his presence in this psalm. So let's think about this psalm for just a moment. He says here, oh, come, there's the invitation, come. Let us sing to the Lord. Let us make a joyful noise to the rock of our salvation. The idea here is to come with singing. There's something joyful about receiving God's invitation. We come to this his event to worship him with a sense of joy. It's not like it's a burden. It's not like it's a hassle. Like it's something we don't want to do. We have to, No, we come with joy. There's an anticipation. There's an expectation. We're joyful as we come. We come to the rock. We make joyful music to the rock of our salvation. Joyful music, not a dirge. You know, I'm so glad. Daniel, thank you. I'm so glad. See, this is ad lib. I didn't prepare this, so I couldn't think of it. I'm so glad, Daniel, that we don't sing songs that are dirges. I grew up in a church where the songs we sang were dirges. They were German hymns. Sometimes we sang them in German. Sometimes we sang them in English, but it was like nothing exciting. It wasn't something that made you go, that you moved or you were happy or you clapped or you certainly didn't feel like raising your hands. You felt like leaving, you know? It was joyful music. That's how we come into God's presence, because we're coming to the rock of our salvation. Stability, solidness. Every time you enter those doors, you're coming to a place where you're being invited to come, where you are accepted, where it doesn't matter what's been going on this week. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter what the condition of your life is. As you come into God's presence, you're wanted. You're desired. God is accepting you. You've been forgiven. You're coming into his presence to receive all that he has for you. And every single time that you come into that, there's never a time that you're going to walk in that door and God's going to say, you really think you deserve to be here? God's never going to say, what about that thing you did this week? What you think? He's never going to bring up the past. He's never going to tell us that we don't fit in, that we're not good enough, that there's something wrong with us. The rock of our salvation is all the time going to accept us. In fact, he wants us to come into his presence. That's why he's inviting you by name. And we come into his presence with thanksgiving. There's a sense of gratitude about worship. All that we are and all that we have received from him, haven't we? I mean, God is the one who has provided everything we need, from air to breathe, food to eat, clothes on our back, jobs that we support our family, everything he's provided. The sense of my character being developed, me maturing, me growing up, me becoming a responsible, loving, caring person has come from God. And so we're grateful. Thank you, God. We come into worship thankfully with a grateful heart, is what this psalm is saying. Come into his presence with thanksgiving. Let us make a joyful noise to him with songs of praise. He goes on, for the Lord is a great God and a great King above all gods. We come into his presence joyfully as we're coming to a king, to the king, to the only king, to the one who's greater than every other thing, to the greatest of all. We come into his presence, and here's the reason why. Because in his hand are the depths of the earth, the heights of the mountains are his also, the sea is his, for he made it, and the dry land which his hands have formed. The idea is everything is his because he made it. And so we come with joy, we come with thanksgiving, because he's inviting us to participate in everything that he has done. He's not saying this was for special people, but not for you. He's saying all of this is for all of you. It's for you by name. Come, come and enjoy and participate in all that I have done. Now listen to what he goes on to say. Oh, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord, our Maker, for he is our God. So we come into his presence and we kneel and we bow down. There's a sense of knowing who we are in the presence of this great God. We come into his presence with humility, not with a sense of equality with him, but a sense of knowing that we are dependent upon him for everything. We are reminded of Jesus' words. It says, apart from me, you can do nothing. And so we come understanding who we are. And so our response in worship is not to have kneelers on the pews and kneel down. It's not talking about that. It's the attitude of kneeling down, of bowing down. It's like a subject in England responds to the King of England walking into their presence. There's this awesome sense of majesty that the only response you can make is to bow before that presence. There's a sense of that in worship. We're invited to come into that posture of worship as we come into God. And here's the reason that we keep coming. Because he says, for he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture and the sheep of his hand. All the way through the Old Testament and the New Testament, God's people are related to God in a relationship that exists between a shepherd and sheep, where we're the sheep and God's the shepherd. And that's what bowing down, humbling ourselves does. We remind ourselves again, we're the sheep. Do you ever need to be reminded of that? I do frequently. That's why we need to come to worship often, because that's where we're reminded that we're sheep and he's the shepherd. And the shepherd, as we know, as we've studied the 23rd Psalm and others, the shepherd's one concern is the care for the sheep. The shepherd's concern is making sure the sheep have everything that they need. He leads them. He takes care of them. He protects them. And so we're coming into the presence of the one who has our best interest in mind as he speaks to us. He's not coming in to butcher us. He's coming in to nurture us, to lead us into green pastures and still waters. He's the shepherd. We're the sheep. And so listen and respond to his invitation as if a shepherd is calling his sheep by name. That's the picture of worship that the psalmist is giving us, responding to that invitation. Now, the second part of the psalm we need to look at as well. Oh, that today you would listen to his voice and not ignore it, not reject it, not doing something else with it, but that you would hear what he's saying and respond to it. You've heard God's invitation, now respond to it. Don't be like, as he goes on here, do not harden your hearts as at Meribah on the day of Manasseh. Now, this is a story that we find told back in the book of Exodus, chapter 17. And the words will be on the screen here in just a minute. Exodus chapter 1, I guess we're going to read through the whole thing here. So we'll go ahead. Now, let me just give you the context. Israel, the Jewish people have been in bondage, in slavery in Egypt for 400 years. It has been a brutal slavery. They have been taken advantage of. They have been beaten. It's been a terrible suffering for 400 years. Finally, God sends a deliverer in the person of Moses, who comes, and through a series of events, God works to the point where the Pharaoh lets the children of Israel go. And they leave, and they go through the Red Sea. It parts. They walk across, and they're into the wilderness. And then they watch as their enemies, the Egyptian soldiers who the Pharaoh sent after them, changing his mind not to let them go, sees all their soldiers, the whole army, swallowed up by the waters of the Red Sea. God has delivered them. They have seen his actions. Now it's 2 days later, after they just saw God deliver them from their enemies. And this passage takes place. From the wilderness of Sin, the whole congregation of the Israelites journeyed by stages as the Lord commanded. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. They encounter a problem. They've just seen God do amazing things. Defeat the entire army of Egypt. They have been set free. They have no weapons. They had nothing to protect themselves, but God protected them, and God defeated their enemies. They've just seen that. Now they need some water. Do you think they might have thought, I wonder how God's going to provide water? Let's ask him. They get on their knees and they ask the Lord to provide water. Guess what God would have done? What would a shepherd do? He would have led them beside still waters. That's what he put. But instead, look what happens. The people quarreled with Moses and said, give us water to drink. Moses said to them, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord? But the people thirsted there for water. And the people complained against Moses and said, why did you bring us out of Egypt to kill us and our children and livestock with thirst? So Moses cried out to the Lord, what shall I do with this people? They are almost ready to stone me. The Lord said to Moses, go ahead of the people and take some of the elders of Israel with you. Take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile and go, and I will be standing there in front of you on the rock of Horeb. Strike the rock, and water will come out so that the people may drink. Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel, and he called the place Massah and Meribah, because the Israelites quarreled and tested the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? They challenged God. They didn't believe that God would take care of them. And so they challenged, they threatened, they questioned whether God was with them or not, after having seen all of this other stuff. And the consequences are devastating. As we read in our text, for 40 years, God says, I loathe that generation and said, they are a people whose hearts go astray and they do not regard my ways. Therefore, in my anger, I swore, they shall not enter my rest. Now think about this. The journey from the Red Sea to the Promised Land should take about 2 weeks walking through the desert, the Sinai desert, over to the Promised Land. But because they didn't believe that God would meet their needs, God loathed that nation, that group, those people. And for 40 years, they wandered through that peninsula. For 40 years, until every single one of that generation had passed away. And there were new generations of Jewish people who would enter into the Promised Land. I would say the consequences were pretty significant for not listening to God's voice. What do you think? Now, there's the illustration that he says. Now, the writer to Hebrews picks up on that very story in Hebrews chapter 3, and I think we have that text up there as well, and he gives us a little more insight into what was really taking place. Therefore, as the Holy Spirit says, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts in the day of rebellion, as on the day of testing in the wilderness, where your ancestors put me to test, though they'd seen my works for 40 years. Therefore, I was angry with that generation, and I said, they always go astray in their hearts. They have not known my ways. As in my anger, I swore they will never enter my rest. There he quotes the passage here from Psalm 95, and now here's his commentary on it. He says, so take care. Who's he speaking to? To you and me, right? So take care, brothers and sisters, that none of you may have an evil, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God. So he's saying the issue with the children of Israel, there's something wrong with their heart. They had an evil, unbelieving heart. They didn't believe that God would be their shepherd and take care of his sheep. They believed that God wasn't going to do that. They believed that they had to take care of themselves and maybe harden, but exhort one another every day as long as it's called today, so that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. Now, here's what the writer to Hebrews is saying. That the reason our hearts get turned away from God is because they have been hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. So here's our text. Our text says, keep that up there. Our text says this. It says, come and worship the Lord. Every Sabbath, every time God is inviting us into his presence, every time we come together to worship, every time, come, and here you will find what you need. The shepherd will care for his sheep as you are worshiping him. There's something powerful about these moments as we gather together in Jesus' name in worship. God is inviting us every week to come into his presence, because here is where he can work on us. Here is where he can give us direction. Here's where he can give us guidance. There's something about being in his presence. The atmosphere is different here. It doesn't work here the same way it works somewhere else. Other places, you have to ask for wisdom. Here, you receive it because this is what God does as we're in his presence. He works in our hearts. He changes us. And over years, we become formed and shaped into the image of his son, Jesus. There's a process that's ongoing, and it happens as we worship. But sometimes, something or someone comes and says, you know, I got another plan. Maybe rather than going to worship, maybe what's really good for your marriage and what's good for you and your kids is if you all go somewhere or do something on Sunday. You know, get out of here and do something, that'll be good for you. And we really think we're doing something good. We really think that's something good. But we're deceived. That's the deceitfulness of sin. And the result is the next time that we're tempted to do something else, it's easier to say yes, because we already did it once, and before long, we're listening to that voice more than we're listening to God. Our hearts have been hardened. We're not even hearing God speak. We're not even aware that he's inviting us to go to church this Sunday morning, this Saturday night. We're not hearing him because we're focused on other things. Our hearts have been hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. That's what the writer to Hebrews is saying about this passage that the writer to Psalms is using as a warning against ignoring God's invitation to come into his presence. Deceitfulness of sin hardens our hearts and kills faith. Faith believes that when I come, I'll receive from God what I need. When I don't come, it's because I don't believe that. I'm trying to find what I need by doing something else. Interesting. The Sabbath day is a big idea, not only in the Old Testament, but also in the New Testament. It's a big idea coming into God's presence on a weekly basis. So, we've looked at this passage, the invitation to come and worship, and the warning against not doing it, and this leads me to some thoughts that I'd like to leave with you tonight. So, when God invites you into his presence to worship him, it is an act of faith to come. You understand that? When God invites us to come into his presence to worship him, whether it's on Sunday morning or in our own personal devotions where we find ourselves in his presence, to come, to respond to that invitation and to come is an act of faith. It's an act of faith, believing that we're going to receive what we need. The writer to Proverbs picked up on this same idea, Proverbs chapter 3, when he said this, Proverbs chapter 1, verse 3, when he said, the fear of the Lord, or the worship of the Lord, is the beginning of wisdom. Where do you start receiving wisdom and insight and the information that you need to know about how to live your life, about how to have a marriage that's pleasing to you and to the Lord, about how to raise your children, how to have a family, where do you get that information? The worship of God is the beginning of that information. In other words, you don't get insight and wisdom outside of worship. That is a big picture. We think we do. We look all over the place to find insight, and we find it in God's presence. It's in God's presence that our hearts are softened as we're worshiping Him, and we remember those words that we said to our spouse before we got here, and it brings us to the point of asking forgiveness. That's what happens when we worship. God works on us. The beginning of wisdom is the worship of God. So every time we come and worship, we're exercising faith that believes that this is where I'm going to receive what I need. I have struggles going on in my life. There's issues, there's difficulties, there's disappointments. How am I going to deal with these things? I'm going to find the answer to that in worship. That's what my faith tells me. That's what my faith tells me. It's where I find that renewed relationship happening of shepherd and sheep. I remember again that God is my shepherd. And what does the shepherd do? He cares for the sheep. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Because the Lord is going to address all of my wants. He's going to lead me as I follow Him, His leading. Guess what I discover? Green pastures. I discover still waters. I discover all the things that God has promised me, all the things that I need to be healthy, to be whole, to be complete, to be renewed, to be restored, to be whole. We discover a relationship. It's not a choice. You know, many times we talk about these invitations of God. Sometimes the Bible speaks of them as commandments. And we have a bad idea in our world about commandments. The idea of commandments are rules. Are things that you have to do. They can't be broken. That's not at all what a commandment is in the Old Testament. It's the idea of the shepherd saying to the sheep, this way to green pastures. Now, what are you going to do? Go this way? It's not like this, I'm going to get beat over the head if I go this way. Okay, you want to eat brambles? Go that way. But this way, here's green pastures. Here's still waters. Here's what you need. It's that kind of a relationship. And every time we don't respond to this invitation, every time we don't come, you know what we're saying? You're not my God, and I'm not your sheep. Something else is. I'm going to follow something else today. I'm going to do something else. You've been deceived by the deceitfulness of sin. You've been led astray by the deceitfulness of sin. Every time we don't come, it's an act of unbelief. Every time we respond, it's an act of faith. Because in His presence, that's where we discover all the things that He's promised. It may not be tonight, but over years of coming into God's presence, our lives are transformed. We're different. We experience all of those things that God promised. Green pastures, still waters, protection. All the things of Psalm 23 become ours, and we discover who we are. One of the most important things that a believer can discover about herself is that she is a sheep. She's not the shepherd. We're not the shepherd. We're the sheep. He's the shepherd. And that's why as we come to worship, we kneel. We bow down. We humble ourselves. We're admitting this is who we are, and God, I need you. The songs we sang tonight were so preparatory to what I'm saying. I mean, they just fit together. This is where we find our needs met. And we keep coming because God keeps calling. There's never going to be a time that God doesn't say, I want you to come into my presence. All the time, every week, week after week after week, even day after day after day. In our own private time together with the Lord, He says, I want you to come into my presence. He's inviting. We keep coming because He keeps calling. All of the invitations, all the commands, the things we find in Scripture, we respond to because God keeps calling. He keeps telling us. It's an act of faith, agreeing with God about who we are and about who He is every time we come. Every time we come into His presence. And the result is rest. We live our lives without a sense of big anxiety and worry and fear and concern. There's a sense of peace. It's the result of following His leading. It's the result of living in the joy of His care. And when His care for us produces joy, it's the promise of forever. We'll dwell in the house of the Lord forever. There's security that's involved in this relationship. And we experience the abundance of life. We discover that abundance isn't about things. Abundance is about God's presence in our lives. That's what fills us up. Or we can go our own way. We can say, you're not my shepherd. You're not my shepherd, and I'm not your sheep. And we'll result in being lost, being wondering where the right way is. What's the right path? What should I do next? And having all these questions and concerns, hitting the wall over and over again, we become vulnerable to being led astray, deceived again and again. And we end up ultimately separated from God. Our hearts are so hardened we don't even hear Him anymore. And that's the biblical definition of death. To be outside of God's presence is death. So come. So come. Worship. Sing. Bow down. Kneel. Surrender. Because the shepherd is calling His sheep. Because the shepherd knows what the sheep need, and that's why we come again and again and again every time.
Thank you for listening to today's message. To learn more about Village Church, visit our website at villagechurchburbank.org.